Okay, good morning everybody. I will call us to order for our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, November 15, 2016, and ask if everybody would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you again. Good morning. This is the first item is always public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, please call off the microphone. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes. And this is for both November 1st minutes and November 8th minutes.
And move approval for both.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any notations, corrections, additions, or thoughts on the minutes?
None.
Clinton?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed, Board.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion and a second. Chitty?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions passed. Consideration of claims.
I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims passed. Consent agenda. Board, please add utility permits 17038. Oh, and we want to pull one item on the consent agenda. We are going to pull item number three on the consent agenda. Consideration of purchase agreement with Charles Gabus Ford for purchase of a 2017 Ford Explorer.
Okay. Move approval with no changes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes with the noted changes. Now let's talk about this purchase, possible purchase of this 2017 Ford Explorer with Charles Gabus Ford. Darren Moon.
Good morning, Darren.
Good morning. By the way, we're going to have to cover tomorrow, certainly.
Okay. Can you do that?
Yeah.
All right, so it's time for a new vehicle. You got how many miles on the vehicle you've been driving?
117,000 now.
Yep.
I'm changing.
We count on you to be out of the county regularly. So it is absolutely time for a new vehicle. Let's talk about these two quotes. We sent it out for bid. We got two quotes back, one from Charles Gabus Ford down in Polk County and one from Ames Ford right here in Ames.
The idea was just to replace what I had, and there wasn't a state bid that fits a mid-size SUV anymore, so I tried to get quotes. For some reason, it's difficult to get quotes for government vehicles that I don't know if they don't make a lot of money on them or what, but I had a difficult time getting them. I got one from Ames pretty quickly, so then I went to Gookin, and then I had a trade-in, so I had to go up there and have them look at the trade and value that. So Gookin did that as well, but then I could not get a quote from them. I gave them three deadlines, and they couldn't meet those. So I just did emails to the Des Moines ones, so I didn't have to go down and do the trade-ins with those. And took 3 weeks, finally got a response from one of them, and that was Charles Gabus. So that's where they stand. They came out a little bit cheaper than Ames Ford's.
But they're not willing to take the trade.
I don't know that at this point. I could still go try, but
if it's good enough, the conservation can use it. And the reason why I say that, we don't want to give them something that's not functional, and we're going to have to put a lot of money in it. You know, but
if it's functional, some of the defrost things are going out of the window, so it's not defrosting. The wheel bearings have been replaced twice, and so those are getting due again, I think.
Remember now, this is 117,000 miles on back, a lot of back roads. It's going to start taking time on this to death.
Eventually.
Yeah.
But then the other question is, if you go to auction, and, you know, are we likely to come up with a debt?
Well, the Kelley Blue Book trade-in was, the 5500 is right at the top of the Kelley Blue Book trade-in, so I think that's a good trade value for Ames Ford. Whether I get that much down at Charles Gabus, I'm not sure.
And what year is it?
It's 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we've got is we've got two bids. We've got a bid from Charles Gabus Ford at $32,998. We got a bid from Ames Ford without the trade at $33,924, so almost $1,000 more from Ames Ford. But they are offering a top-notch trade-in if they'll still honor it, because what, it's been a couple months since you talked to them, right? A couple months, a couple thousand miles?
Yeah, so starting to get that point where I need to
get back and make sure that they're still good with that.
Right.
I believe, and you guys, I believe that this is one of those vehicles that we have as a county got the utmost value out of, and now if we try to hang on to it, it's going to nickel and dime us to death.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of getting rid of it. I always like the idea of doing business local if at all possible, but we just got to determine what's in the best interest here.
The only other question, the $1,000 difference, I'm looking at maintenance, oil change, all those types of things. If you take it to a dealer locally, if it's not bought here, do you have to automatically pay that difference?
As far as regular maintenance, we did that in-house.
We do it in-house anyway.
Will Barrington's have gone a couple times. We did that. When there was a Ford dealer here in Nevada, they did it, but wouldn't necessarily have to go to the one I bought it from.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah. No, I'm going away.
Darren, if Ames Ford would honor the $5,500 trade-in that they quoted, do you feel like that's the better deal for us?
Yeah, I'd be comfortable going that route, yeah.
Clearly. I mean, Ames Ford puts property tax money into our coffers, and I'd like to support the local business and the fact that they're willing to give you a high end. And when you said the high end of the Kelley Blue Book, they're actually looking to do a bit of the deal, and I hope they still want to honor that. But the thing is, I would very much like to see you do that here in the county.
Okay.
So we can have a motion contingent upon them honoring the trade that was offered as of October 20th is the date, last date I see on here.
Well, I would move that we make a conditional acceptance of the offer from Ames Ford for the purchase of a new, what it would have come on, we kind of have F-150?
Ford Explorer.
That conditional on the fact that they honored the previous trade valuation on our old vehicle.
Okay.
Second.
Yeah, we have a motion and a second. Further discussion. No. Darren, anything else we need to think about? You're comfortable with this direction? Okay. Chitty?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Let's see if we can get that done. Thank you, Darren.
Thank you, Darren.
Good morning.
Look at her. She's ready to go. Public hearing items. First consideration of Ordinance 246, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County. Emily.
Hi.
And Jerry.
Good morning.
Yes. So this is a request for a rezoning of the Alan McHose property. The rezoning portion of this is 5.72 acres in Section 1 of Grant Township. The future land use map amendment portion of this is the entire parcel, which is 14.78 acres. The applicant is Alan McHose of 1015 West Lincoln Highway in Nevada. Like I said, there are really two portions to this request, which is, are a zoning map amendment and then an amendment to the future land use map in the C2C plan that we just adopted. So here we are, Nevada. This property is located in the unincorporated area of the county, but is surrounded pretty much on three sides by the city of Nevada. The entire property parcel is outlined in yellow there. The area to be rezoned is highlighted in blue there. You can see it's also colored red. The current zoning of this property is CLI. The proposed zone would be the A1 district. As you can see up here, the northern portion of this property is already zoned A1. The reason for this request is really so that the applicant can include this entire property with his homeowner's insurance policy. Which would result in a cost savings for the property owner. The area to be rezoned here is the southern portion. You can see this property is covered in, is included in the flood zone, so there's not, there's that environmental natural resource area to consider when thinking about the future land use. This is formerly the site of Nevada Brick and Tile Works. Parcel H, as I'm sure you remember, to the southeast of the subject property was recently split in July of this year and sold to the county for the animal shelter building, which they were leasing previously. The applicant proposes to rezone the southern portion from the commercial light industrial district to the A1 agricultural district to better align with the land use. The applicant has no, there is currently no commercial use on this property, and the applicant has no intention of using the property for commercial use. The applicant intends to maintain this area as open space. Some site photos looking northeast from the south side of Lincoln Way. You can see here on the right is the Story County Animal Shelter building. The subject property is located right there. Here's looking northwest from the south side of Lincoln Highway. The applicant does own two residential properties. You can't really see it here, but kind of hidden behind the trees, but then this home here as well. To the south of the proposed property is a residential development located in the city of Nevada. Here is, standing on the north side of Lincoln Way, looking at the subject property to be rezoned. Just a couple more pictures. It is a natural area. The site of the Nevada Brick and Tile did fill with water in the early 80s. Here's standing near the pond looking at the rezoning area. In terms of standards of approval, the first standard is that the proposed rezoning conforms to the Story County Development Plan. And we felt that it really aligns with particularly two goals within the C2C plan, in order to preserve and protect and plan around physical characteristics of the land, including floodplains, steep slopes, wetlands, rich soils, and rare geologic or environmental characteristics. And then also goal 8, which is to ensure that land use transitions are gradual or designed to reduce potential incompatibilities among land uses. Here is a look at the C2C future land use map. As you can see, it's currently designated as commercial industrial area. The proposal here is to change that to agricultural conservation area. The second standard of approval is that the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent for the proposed district requirements. We feel that this changing it to the A1 district does create open space with natural vegetation as a transition between the residential areas and the agricultural areas in the north. The proposed rezoning shall be compatible with surrounding land uses and development patterns. The northern portion of this property is already zoned A1. The unincorporated area to the north of the property is zoned A1 as well. The trees and natural vegetation on the northern portion of the property do continue up into the north, and really this would be a gradual transition. This is a summary of this. It just says that if more than 50% of the property is located within the natural or has a natural resource designation on it, it just says that The property should be rezoned to a more restrictive district, and that is the case here. The A1 district is more restrictive than the commercial light industrial district. So just a couple notes here. The northern portion of the property is already zoned A1. The unincorporated area to the north is also zoned A1. We believe it's consistent with the A1 agricultural district's statement of intent, and the configuration of the parcel would make it difficult to accommodate a commercial light industrial use, just given the land use, land development regulations currently in our code. This is just looking at the analysis for the C2C future land use map amendment. As I said, a majority of the property is in the natural resource designation, and the agricultural conservation would designation would provide greater protection to the natural areas. Some comments from the interagency review team, just from the assessor saying that the property would be assessed as excess residential for the 2017 assessment. Some comments from planning and zoning. We did ask that a survey be done of the exact rezoning area so we could have a legal description. Legal notifications were published in the three county newspapers, and notice letters were sent to surrounding property owners. We did get a few phone calls just really for clarification about what was being proposed, and then someone asked why they received a second notice, and I just explained about the process of notification for public hearings. So in summary, there won't be any change to the use of the property. The property will continue to be to fit with the surrounding land use, and the applicant has no interest in conducting commercial use on the property. And because of the natural resource, the floodplain limitations, it would be difficult to meet the county zoning requirements for the commercial industrial use. On November 2nd, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval to the Board of Supervisors of this the zoning map amendment from CLI Commercial Industrial to the A1 Agricultural District, and the Story County C2C Future Land Use Map Amendment from the Commercial Industrial Area to the Agricultural Conservation Area as put forth in this case. So the alternatives, we are recommending approval of the first one.
No, that's actually a mouthful.
Yeah. Would you like me to read it?
No, as long as Shelly can.
Yeah.
Can get it? Okay.
Yeah.
Any questions on that?
None. Okay. So, just to be clear, we would be taking action on both Ordinance 246 and Resolution 1740.
Correct.
Which both do exactly what we're talking about doing. Right. We're not talking about changing the existing use of the property. In fact, we're doing more to assure that that's the way it's going to be used in
correct.
An ongoing way, which is what we deem as the most appropriate use for this property.
Now, you have a knowing Al and Jill pretty well that was this is their first mission. You actually find, which is nice, if you have property owners' desire to do what the county would like to see done, too. This is a win-win all around.
It's a win-win, but we need to open the public hearing and make sure that the public feels like it's a win-win. So with that, I will open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 246 or Resolution 1740. And seeing no one interested in moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board for action.
I would move first alternative. I submit it.
First alternative. So in one vote, if you second this, Marty, we will deal with Ordinance 246 and Resolution 1740.
Yep. I'm comfortable doing that, and I second it.
Okay. Got a motion and a second. Further discussion.
We need to set a second consideration.
Wayne, you want to add something to your motion?
Which will be, what's the following next Tuesday?
12-6.
12-6? Yeah. as because of the no...
No meeting on the 22nd and claims only on the 29th.
Yep, that was in the right. recommendation. So, yep, December 6th.
December 6th.
Mm-hmm.
That's that December 6th for second consideration.
You accept that amendment to his motion?
I accept that, and I would second it.
All right.
Okay.
Any further discussion or clarification? Gary, Emily, anything else we need to be considering?
Nope.
Clint?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Ordinance 246 passes, and Resolution 1740 passes, and we set December 12th as the date for the second.
Six.
December 6th is the date for the second consideration. All right. Next item on the agenda is consideration of Resolution 1738 vacating South Ridge Street. Jared.
All right, a little background. This item was on the 2015 Planning and Development Work Program, so we're very excited to have this before you. It got forwarded to the 2016 Work Program. It involves a property owned by Lloyd Harris, who resides at 6625 South Ridge. The issue really is that the house, the dwelling, single-family dwelling, was constructed in 2002, and it was built too close to the front yard setback. It's an R1 district, and so there's a 40-foot setback. The house is approximately 30 feet currently from the front yard setback. There's a secondary issue separate from this requested partial road right-of-way vacation, and that involves a side yard setback of this dwelling. There's a 10-foot side yard setback, and the attached garage appears to be on a common property line. So 4 years later, 2006, the property owner, Harris, went through a process to acquire what became parcel C, a triangular-shaped piece on the northern portion of what was Mr. Bill Walk's property. There were some issues with the deed and the legal description, so that parcel C could not be transferred to the Harris's name. So that's a secondary issue. The Harris's have hired an attorney to work on the deed, make the corrections, and that document is before Mr. Billwalk to sign. So that's a secondary issue. There was also issues with the process that the county went through in 2002. At that time, we were going to vacate the entire bulb portion of this cul-de-sac. There were problems with the legal description on the survey, and so the process that we went through was rendered to be null and void. So here we are today. We did have conceptual review to September 8th. All three property owners that have ownership of lots along that road came to the meeting and agreed to the portion that should be vacated to Mr. Harris, and we'll show you what that looks like.
Okay.
So where we're at, we're northwest of Ames, southwest of Gilbert. It's over 2 miles in each direction in Franklin Township. Closer view, this is a part of the Woods subdivision. We're dealing with lot 16. It's the parcel that's on the north side of that cul-de-sac. Closer view yet, again, it's 6625 South Ridge. Again, the house is in the southeast portion of the parcel. And again, it was constructed too close to the front property line, which is the issue that's before you, to the request to vacate part of the road right away.
Right.
A secondary issue is Mr. Billwalk owned this parcel to the south and sold this triangle-shaped piece to the Harrises. But again, there were issues with that. Mm-hmm. That's being corrected as well. So here's what we have. The South Ridge Road, the portion to be vacated is this area here. It's about 0.08 acres. The parcel where the Harris's house is, lot 16, is 1.97 acres. And parcel C is 0.13 acres. So if the board approves the vacation of that portion of the road right-of-way, and if this gets acquired with the parcel where the house is, lot 16 and parcel C, it'll be a 2.18 acre parcel. Site, go ahead.
Who owns the portion that we're talking about vacating right now? So that's by easement, right?
County, dedicated to the county, maintained by the property owners on this road. Site photos, we're looking north. It's a gravel road. This is the property at the southwest corner of the intersection of South Swing and South Ridge. It's the Swain family, 5677 South Swing. This is the Crow family property, 6600 South Ridge. And then the Harris's property, which is the property that we're dealing with, 6625 South Ridge. The property within that right-of-way bulb does fall off significantly, which really doesn't render it for much use for a road right-of-way. This would be the space for turning around that could still be accomplished with if it were vacated, the portion that's requested. Again, conceptual review was September 8th. Assessor's department did indicate that all three parcels should be adjoined together into one tax parcel, the house, lot 16, parcel C, and then the portion of the right-of-way to be vacated. Auditor's office provided a wealth of information about past history and also helped with the legal description. Engineering and planning department both support what's being requested. We do have a signed agreement from the three property owners, which was received October 19. We did send public notices before the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting October 26, and we sent them again November 4 before this meeting. We received zero comments. Board of Supervisors did approve Resolution 17-37, which set the public hearing for today. And again, as I mentioned, Mr. Harris does have a deed, a corrected deed, before Mr. Wilwock to sign. And again, once the, you know, if this is approved, this resolution 17-38, it needs to be recorded along with the deed to complete this action. So, points to consider. Through the requested vacation, we'll have a dwelling that will meet the front yard setback. General public will still continue to be able to use the road. They'll be able to turn around. One of the things that came up in the conceptual review was the Crow family currently parks a vehicle or two. They want to be able to do that. They'll still be allowed to do that within the public portion of that right-of-way. Important thing is we have three property owners that agreed to the portion that should be vacated to the Harris's, and again, that western portion of that bulb is, because of the grade, it's not good for a road anyway. So the Planning and Zoning Commission did meet November 2, and did recommend approval of the requested street right-of-way vacation, which leads us to Board of Supervisor Action 1. County Board of Supervisors recommends approval of Resolution 17-38 addressing the South Ridge Street vacation. It's item admin 01-16 as submitted. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Go back to the picture of the house in the driveway. I just want to make sure I understand what we're... Yeah, so right there. So as it stands today, that garage on the right is basically right on the property line. The existing property line, now they bought more property, but it hasn't been recorded like we need it recorded.
And that's a secondary issue. That has nothing to do with this.
Has nothing to do with this. I'm just trying to get the whole picture. And right now, our easement for this fictional cul-de-sac that it could have been built includes some of this gravel that we see leading up to the paved court part of the driveway. And so what we're discussing is vacating ground that is basically around where you have the address listed right now.
Approximately.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to make sure I can visualize what's happening here. And so the public will continue to be able to use that area. If they pull in mistakenly or whatever and need to turn around, they'll continue to be able to use it. But the Harris's will also be able to park a vehicle or vehicles out in that area.
And the property to the south, or to the east, excuse me.
Okay. Questions? Okay, this is a public hearing as well. So we'll go ahead and open public hearing and ask if anybody would like to address Resolution 1738 vacating that part of South Ridge Street. Seeing no one, moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. Jerry, I think it's amazing that we got all three property owners to agree to a solution. Looks to me like this house was built where it had to be built from the topography, and maybe we just didn't get the whoever put these lots together didn't get the lot lines in the right places, and now it looks like we're trying to go back and correct that.
Correct.
Other questions for Jerry?
How did this come up that we became aware of this?
To be honest with you, we inherited this. It was a 2015 work program item that didn't get accomplished and got carried forward for 2016.
I would have a Rick's comment, so I find it well pleasing and somewhat surprising that you had three property owners in addition to the county all being at one line. And next, what I would assume, easy decision to make.
Yeah, we're just thrilled that we're able to.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Wayne, anything?
No.
All right.
All been covered.
Okay. Take a motion on Resolution 1738.
I would move to approve Resolution 1738, vacating the South Ridge Street.
Second.
The motion and a second. Further discussion.
Now, we have to have a second one because of the resolution, so we'll have to set 12-6 for second consideration.
So amended.
Okay, second.
All right. So we've got consideration of 1738, Resolution 1738, with a second reading on December 6th. Chief.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. We'll rehear this on the 6th.
I don't know that we need a second reading on this, but if the board wants a second reading, we can do that. And this is a right-of-way vacation.
That's why I thought, well, we got one set now. If it passed, we're going to deal with it like that.
Okay.
The issue is consistently going with resolutions, and we can always, you know, take action on that second one and not deal with it beyond that.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Good job.
Thank you.
Okay. Consideration, now we're two additional items. Consideration of awarding bid for Hickory Grove Shower Park Building and Storm Shelter.
Good morning, Mike Cox.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good morning. Good. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're good.
I would have been better if these bids were to come in just a little lower, Mike.
Well, we all would have been.
Oh, yeah. You did pretty good at this, though, Dan. I want you to know.
All right. Yeah, we all would have been. As you know, we opened the bids last week. Here we received 7 bids. Low bid, $712,400. The high bid, $835,000. Bids were fairly consistent. This low bid was, $15,000 under the next low bid. Low bid was presented by Woodruff Construction. And as you know, we don't have... Whoa! Can you guys read that?
Yep.
We didn't have that much funding. That was over our engineer's estimate. We identified $100,000 in the FY16 budget. We used a small portion of that for design and planning. Amended that out of the FY16 budget. And with the notes that it would be spent in 17, it's not in the 17 budget right now. But in my discussions with Lisa, she said in her view she viewed it as a $600,000 available balance right now. And so at any rate, we've got the what that does when you add the low bid for construction with all of our other project costs, it gives you a project cost of about $819,000, all said and done. So that does include, and I've got it noted up there, it does include a contingency, a 5% contingency. And so that leaves a funding gap, a funding difference of $220,000. So, obviously, when we have a significant difference like that, it's time to go back to the drawing board a little bit and figure out what the best course of action is. So, these options identify several, or these I should say, are several options that we considered. Conservation Board met last night, and we went through all of these options, and they recommended moving forward with option number one, which is to award contract and appropriate enough funding to include a contingency. Option number two is to award a contract and not include contingency funds, with the idea that if change orders were needed in the construction project, then we come back and address that at the time. The third option that we looked at is that we don't award this contract. We essentially redesign, remove the storm shelter components, and build a shower house. Looking at all of the additional expenses with doing that, some inflation with doing that, and the savings of removing those components, that would be a savings of about $41,000. If we take out the storm components and just had a shower building, and then we would not have a storm shelter. And that would be a project that we would have to construct next winter. There's a 6% inflation factored into that figure right there. 3B is another option that we looked at, and that is, let's say we move ahead with designing just the shower building and constructing just the shower building, and then at some point we want to go in and put in some other storm shelter. There are precast concrete storm shelters that can be installed, so I priced those out, and all in all, that actually is a more expensive route. Just under $100,000. The next option that we looked at is not to award a contract and redesign the building to maintain the storm shelter component, and we would miss the window construction, but we would then push it back to summer at the earliest. So we'd save about $61,000 if we did that. If you remember the architectural, the roof on that, the peaked roof, is not germane to the storm shelter.
Right.
It's a maintenance item. It's better than a flat roof, and it's an aesthetic item. And so we would remove that peaked roof. And construct it this summer, we'd be able to save $60,000. We would lose camping income, not all of it. This is about half of the camping income that I anticipated we would lose for a number of reasons. One, we'd have less desire for folks to camp, and two, we'd have some safety reasons. We'd have to close some campsites in order to allow construction to happen. So all in all, it's essentially a flush. It's $2,000 savings. Next option we looked at was not to award the contract and to, again, remove the roof, redesign it, construct it in the winter, and to remove all of those kind of items that we chatted about at a work session prior to releasing or soliciting the bids, that those kind of maintenance items. So we go back to remove the finished block and go with a standard CMU block and paint it. We would remove the floor finish. Let's see, what was the other item in there? I guess those are the roof, the block, and the floor finish. And then, again, delay construction. We anticipate saving about $39,000 if we did that. All of those items, as we discussed earlier, they're items that, the way it's designed is pretty much a maintenance-free building, and these items add maintenance costs. If we were to go forward with this option. And finally, the last option is just not to award and tackle this again at a later date. So I was surprised at some of these numbers. I thought by redesigning, we'd be able to maybe save a little bit more, but this is really not the way the numbers came out. So, again, the Conservation Board met last night and is recommending option number one with the idea that more funding is going to be required.
And so that we're clear, I think we had an expectation going in to bid letting that the bids were going to come in higher than what we had budgeted. As I recall, Mike, there was a hope that it was going to be somewhere $100,000 or less that we were going to be over, not $200,000. You and I talked on the phone a couple days ago, and for me, the problem is finding those additional dollars. The one that makes the most sense is absolutely going ahead and awarding it and just figuring out how to pay for it. But you got to figure out how to pay for it. And sitting here today, I don't know how that happens. So my question is, have you checked it? How long do we have to make a decision to award a bid? Because the option that's not up there is we do nothing. We take no action today. We come back on December 6th. With more information, can we find the money? Can we get it done?
We had this discussion at the Conservation Board last night.
That was considerable discussion. But go ahead, Mike.
You know, we looked at available resources that the Conservation Board has through the trust fund, and the Conservation Board is willing to use those to make up that difference. So they have essentially said that they will fund additional with the hope that the supervisors would kick in to make up some of this difference today.
And I raised that question. I knew that we were talking perhaps a 50-50 through earlier conversations. That was with the 100,000 figure out there. But as they talked about some of the other funding options within conservation, And then a debate over the flat roof and versus some of the other versus the original design vault roof that was there. From my own experience of being in buildings with flat roofs, I just thought that really could lead to many more problems down the road for us, and that we probably ought to try to do that. So my thought process at that time, knowing full well that I didn't have the authority to commit to the board, but would be to ask the board, would we be amenable to taking a look at where conservation was looking at kicking in some additional dollars from some of the trust fund dollars. We didn't decide exactly what that amount would be, but it would certainly not anticipate be at 50,000 range, which would be on the 100,000. So trying to come up with what we thought would be the best possible solution was something that I think is sitting here before us. And you asked a good question about if we delayed a week, what does that do to the overall awarding of the contract? Because wasn't there potentially a timetable? We were hoping to have this bid able to be completed so that we would be able to have our camping and all of those things underway without any hiccups next spring.
Yeah, our completion deadline is the end of April.
End of April.
And I know that this firm has bid it very aggressively. They want the winter work, and their intention was to start before Thanksgiving, frankly.
Okay.
And so, you know, Wayne does a very, very good synopsis of what happened last night. The Conservation Board essentially said, gave me the ability to come and discuss with you and come up with those dollars, with the understanding that we had to come up with $220,000.
So what we've got right now is we've got $500,000 in the budget, but we believe that there's an additional $100,000 that was budgeted in 2016 and not fully utilized, or not even.
We used $2,000.
So we got $98,000. Let's call it $100,000 that we had budgeted in 16 that we didn't utilize. And so if you add that $100,000 to the $500,000, we got $600,000 budgeted.
Right.
The nice part is, the, you know, our 2017 actuals are looking pretty good right now, and I had great comfort in the idea of having come up with an additional $50,000. It's the beyond that that it started. I mean, we're getting ready to talk about a generator for a different building. I mean, it is, we start to limit our ability to adjust the greater we go. What I'm hearing you suggest is that your conservation board has dollars in their trust fund, and they believe that this is an important enough project that they're willing to use whatever's necessary out of that trust to get it done, and they're asking the supervisors, how much more can you reasonably come up with to help us do this? We think it's an important project. We don't think there's a whole lot of savings by scrap. Well, we can't scrap it. I mean, clearly the building needs to be replaced at a minimum as a shower building. We don't have a storm shelter out there. We need that. This idea that we might be able to save $40,000 maybe down the road is almost laughable, you know. And so I'm hearing you ask, and I sit here and just thinking this through. Yeah, I mean, so if this board had comfort in that we got $600,000 there, the $500,000 that's budgeted, the $100,000 that was budgeted in 16 but not utilized, and the board could come up with an additional $100,000 to take it to $700,000 and say to the conservation board, you've got to figure out whether you go contingency or not, you've got to figure out every dollar beyond $700,000 that this costs us. I would hope that that would give the conservation board flexibility to be able to get this done. It would give us certainty of what's actually being utilized, and just knowing our numbers like I know them, we've got capacity to get there if this board deems that that's the appropriate way to go.
I would be comfortable if you weren't putting in contingency dollars, because the expectation is things will not go as planned, and you always have the ability to return any unused contingency dollars back.
Right.
So that's a minimum jump off point. I don't see anything on what you had listed here as a good path forward. Delaying it costs money. I'm sure that the board, the conservation board, put a lot of thought into proposing what they did. It costed more than we would have liked. But I think if you look at it with eyes not from 2016, but 2026, 2036, we would be wise to push this and lean on that way. I would like to think that the conservation board can work with us to meet us there, because I think this is a facility, it's our flagship operation in the county. And the thing is, it's long overdue, it needs done, and we are at the point it needs to be said yes to, and I'd like to think that you want to work with us to do that.
Well, and we're really talking about, so I had an expectation that we were going to be having this conversation. I just thought instead of the board going to find an additional $100,000, we were talking about the board going to find an additional $50,000. So we're really talking about $50,000 beyond, if that's where we end up. Mike, does what I'm suggesting and possibly even approaching proposing, would it give you comfort? Do you think that that's a workable solution?
Yes.
Can I get a little clarity on the dollars then?
Yeah, I'm suggesting that the Board of Supervisors, through the $500 we have budgeted, plus the $100 that we had budgeted in 16 that's really still just sitting there, add an additional $100, and we say the Board of Supervisors is going to put forward $700,000 for this project. Conservation needs to figure out the rest. That's not a motion, that's a suggestion.
Mike, do you have anything out of that?
The conservation board would support that.
It would, yeah. That was a great discussion last
time. Does it put you guys in a tough spot if that's where we end up? Or can you make that work knowing your numbers?
You know, we looked at, you know, balances in the account and what we've got in the pipe. You know, coming, and we've got some three projects coming that all are showing a gap, but we've got you know, a pretty solid revenue stream in that trust as well.
Okay.
And so, you know, the board, again, I think Marty, you said it well. The board, conservation board, recognized that, hey, this isn't where we want to be. This isn't really how we anticipated using the trust fund, but this seems to be the right thing to do, and so they're supportive of making up the difference between what the supervisors would bring forward and what that 820 is.
Yeah, so if we were to go down that road, it means Story County committing an additional $100,000 for conservation to utilize in this project. Conservation is going to have to come up with what could be about $100,000, but it could also be about $130,000 extra that conservation is going to have to come up with. The nice part for us, Ford, is it gives us some certainty of what our level of contribution is going to be in this thing. And I believe, I think maintaining our fiscal flexibility, especially as we look at what's going to happen starting in January and some of the new initiatives that we might be approaching, we need to have some flexibility with our finances. I think that still does that for us. It does not bind us with the additional $100,000 to not being able to look at other things.
So on clarity's sake, the county has no more exposure to this project than $700,000.
The Story County Board of Supervisors has no more exposure. Conservation is going to figure out the rest.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And really what it is, Marty, is if we were to go down that road, it's the Board of Supervisors committing an additional $100,000 to this project.
Right. And keep in mind, what I was really impressed mostly about is they did not put a dollar figure to what they asked the board to do. They just looked at the total figure as Mike laid it out, looked at other possibilities. If we were realistically thinking about the 50-50 possibility, we're closer to it by adding the additional 100. You know, and so that's kind of where it all flushed out, knowing that the cost was much higher than anticipated. According to the engineering cost.
So there was no desire to move in any other direction, but the first suggestion to accept the project as it was proposed?
There were discussions about what if they did that. In the long run, is it really going to be cost effective, and would the return on investment be there? And the big consideration, again, had a lot to do with by delaying it and then cutting back, limiting the revenue on the campsite was a big factor in why they wanted to move forward.
Must have been quite a meeting last night.
It was. It was very good.
All right, we're to the point that the board needs to take action if we're going to take action.
Well, I would move that we take the suggestion breakdown as Superintendent Sanders laid out, and that the board would be committing the additional $100,000 towards this project, with fully understanding that the Conservation Board would make up the difference if it actually exceeded that total as proposed.
Okay. As we're contributing $700,000 to make this happen, and the Conservation Board is prepared to stand any difference, I have comfort in seconding that.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Story County will contribute a maximum of $700,000 to this project via general fund dollars, and the Conservation Board will need to utilize other resources for anything above that. That's the motion in front of us.
Yeah, and I think it's important that for the public listening that, we recognize that we had budgeted dollars already for this project, in FY17, and we had some dollars still identified for the FY16 budget. So it's not like that we're talking about finding an additional $700,000.
Right. We're finding an additional
$100,000, and that's
right.
Important.
That's the motion that you made that Marty seconded, is an additional $100,000 from the Board of Supervisors in order to be able to move ahead with this project. It's a needed project. It'll be a good project. It will improve, as Marty rightly says, the kind of the flagship operation that we have for conservation. So, further discussion. Clinton?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Hope we can make that work.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mike.
Next item is discussion consideration of Resolution 1741, Ballard Residential Parcel Subdivision. Emily, again, two times in one day.
Oh.
Emily, that's outstanding.
Oh,
Okay, this is an application for a residential parcel subdivision. The subject property is located in Section 16 of Palestine Township, and the applicant is William and Tracy Jennings of 2162 110th Street in Story City. Here's a vicinity map. We're looking at Palestine Township. As you can see, the subject property is pretty close to the center of the township. It's about 1.1 miles northwest of Huxley, about two miles southeast of Kelly, and about 2.6 miles northeast of Slater. Zooming in a little bit, the subject property is along 530th Street. This map shows that there are about 13 dwellings within a half mile of the property, of the subject property, and seven dwellings just right along 530th there. There are 17 parcels equal to or greater than 35 acres, which, based on our current ordinances, we would have the potential of permitting issuing a permit for a single-family dwelling on those properties. The current configuration, this is the first split from the original quarter-quarter. This is a...7.54-acre parcel. The existing dwelling is there on the north with an existing agricultural building. The proposed division is two properties for single-family dwellings, a 3.85-acre parcel to the north there with the existing dwelling, and then the proposed lot 2 would be a 3.55-net-acre parcel to the south. Here's the... proposed subdivision plat. You can see the building, the existing home to the north, and then the proposed lot 2 to the south. Just looking north along 530th Avenue, the property then would be to the west to our left here. Here's looking southwest from the northeast corner of the subject property, the existing dwelling on proposed lot 1. Here's looking straight west at the subject property, proposed lot 1 once again. Looking southwest at proposed lot 2, as you can see, this property is not in agricultural production currently. Here's looking northwest at proposed lot 2 from 530th. And once again, looking northwest from 530th Avenue at proposed lot 1 on the right-hand side there and proposed lot 2 on the left. Looking south along 530th, the property directly to the west, the property to the south of the proposed property is in agricultural production, and the property directly to, the east here, is in row crops as well. Here's the applicable regulations from our land development regulations. The property can only create two development lots, which is the case here. There's no street set apart for new, no land set apart for new streets, alleys, parks, open space. It lies wholly within the A1 district. Both development lots contain a minimum of one net acre. There's frontage here, and then no variances are being proposed, and there's been no previous residential parcel subdivision on this property. Comments from the interagency review team. From the engineering department, any new proposed driveway needs to be at least 300 feet to this away from the existing drive. We just had a couple questions on the plat from the planning and development department. The city of Huxley was notified on October 13th of this proposed residential parcel subdivision. They approved a resolution in support of the proposed residential parcel subdivision on October 25th. Notification letters were mailed to the surrounding property owners regarding the public meeting. We did not receive any comments from the general public prior to the staff report or this meeting. In summary, the existing dwelling is on proposed lot 1. The additional residential lot will be located on the southern portion of the property. The existing dwelling will be on proposed lot 1. As I said, this property is not in agriculture production. The property has frontage along 530th Avenue. It's not in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. There are 7 dwellings located along 530th Avenue within the half mile of this property. There's no flood zone on this property, and the city of Huxley supports the residential parcel subdivision. So the alternatives for in front of the board, planning and development staff are recommending alternative 1, which would be to approve the subdivision plat, the Ballard residential parcel subdivision, as put forth in case SUV 1016, and that would be approving resolution number 1741. Any questions?
I don't have any questions.
That's pretty straightforward.
Okay. Really straightforward. Barb, now's the chance if you have anything you want to address it. If you don't, that's fine. But if you do, now's the chance. And if you do, come up. Good? Okay.
So we're going to leave now.
Okay. All right.
Whoever lives nearest the good people, which I know they will.
Absolutely.
All right. And we're getting into a good community.
I like that you like your community. Thank you for being here today. Okay, so if there's no questions, Barb didn't want to address us on this. Now is the time where we would take action on Resolution 1741.
I want to adopt Resolution 1741.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Emily, nice job putting all this together. Chidi?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1741 passes.
Thank you, Emily.
Okay, no agency reports today. Departmental reports, Conservation Corridor report. Mike Cox.
Well, thank you. I've just got a few items here that I'll go through relatively quickly. The first one is the research park. You know that we continue to move forward on design of that facility. We had a design charrette a couple weeks ago, and lots of good information came out there. So our engineers are working on putting together a conceptual master plan, and that being really just some, like I said, conceptual or sketch that would identify what we place where on the property. So that's the next thing. Once we get that, we will bring that forward at some point here and have a public open house on design. Also, in regard to the research park, we're working with some other stakeholders on developing a media plan. So Leanne's helping with that, as is the city of Ames, as is the research park. So got a lot of folks working on the
media. Well, we got to make sure that the public is well aware of what's happening out there, especially if we start taking out a bunch of trees, like I think is going to be the reality.
Right. There will be a little bit of shock once we start work there. There certainly will be. In essence, we're trying to set the clock back a little bit in the environmental process on the site, more to the sustainable level, the native level of the land, rather than the functional level that some of it's in right now.
Well, it feels like I saw an aerial photo of that area from the 1930s. and there was no real ag going on at that in that area in the 1930s. It was a native prairie, and there were almost no, I feel like there was one little area of trees, but almost no trees, really no stream to speak of. I mean, it was...
There was no stream.
Fascinating.
It was intermittent surface water flow. There was no stream.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. And we're not going to set the clock back that far.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But we do want to restore more of that what it used to be, and all of that was on a soils analysis, all of it was derived under prairie. Any soil throughout the state, you can look at it and determine what it was derived under, whether that be what type of vegetation it was, whether that be prairie, whether that be savanna, whether that be woodland, etc. This is all prairie soil. And so we want to, we want to restore a lot of that, and the same token, restore some savanna that was on the site as well. You mentioned those few trees. So we'll do that. And there will no doubt be more trees on the site than there was in the 1930s.
True.
But less than there are right now.
And Mike and I and others took a tour of a few things that Ames has done, and really a nice example. It's different than what we're talking about doing here at the research park, but a nice example of some stream restoration, and in this case in a residential area. Ames went through in College Creek, west side of Ames, some of what they did there, trying to take it back to the more natural, more room for the stream to expand when it wants to expand, definitely less contaminants able to just freely flow through the waterway, and we're interested in all of that.
Right. And that wasn't that stream, Rick, you remember from the tour, those of you that maybe haven't been there, know that that's not an incised stream anymore. And when I say incised, that's cut down into the ground. The reason it gets cut down is because you lose the bank stability through the vegetation, and you have more intermittent kind of flash flows. So real heavy volume flow, and then back off, and you get another heavy volume flow with no vegetation. That just takes soil.
Sure, and when the water can't spread out, it cuts down.
Right.
And then the next time you have a high water event, it cuts down further, and it cuts down further, and we want the water to be able to spread as much as possible.
Exactly. And so it's just a snowball effect. It just worsens itself. And so at any rate, we know that through the research park property, with the incisions in the streams, we have disconnected, just what you're saying, Rick, we have disconnected floodplains. So that water is staying in that incised channel and isn't utilizing the floodplain. Well, the floodplain's there for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that floodplain helps to many different levels, helps to reduce volume downstream, helps in absorption. Helps to clean water, take nutrients out, et cetera, et cetera. So, at any rate, we have a non-functioning system there, and that's one of the things that we'll do through this project is illustrate the best ways to handle these. So, speaking of the stream, we also worked with Iowa State University students, and they conducted some biotic surveys for us. So they did fish sampling in the stream, and then they did macro invertebrate sampling, so insect sampling kind of in the stream. And so we have those analyses done. They found three species of fish, which was a little bit surprising, but it was nice to have them get out and do that.
And they were?
There was lots of creek chubs. This one species, essentially those are a type of little minnows.
Yeah.
And they had green sunfish and I think one token bluegill.
He was lonely though.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Sorry, well, not a lot of reproduction going on there. And so the macro invertebrate survey was pretty consistent with a lot of things you can tell from that assessment, because there's certain macro invertebrates that live in degraded water versus kind of average water versus pretty good water, And so we found, found kind of a balance, but more on that poor water quality spectrum with the macroinvertebrates. As you know, we've also been working on one of the two residences there, and we now have a park ranger living in one of them, the one on the south side, and we still need to do some work on the one to the north.
And what ultimately do you envision that's going to be used for, the one to the north? So the one to the south is going to be maintained as a ranger residence. What's the one on the north?
Correct. To be determined. We really, you know, there's been a few ideas float around, and that house is best suited. Of course, it's designed as a single family residence, and it's, you know, that's what it's best suited for. So whether we use it for kind of an intermittent, like the NCCC group that we had, kind of a work crew housing, for short periods of time, or we make it available for a residence. Those are the things we're thinking about. We thought about some kind of educational capacity. Yep. Parking is hard.
Hard there. These two residents aren't residents that that Story County thought it was going to get. I mean, this all happened late in the process that the research park donated that ground to make this whole thing come together, and included those two residents. And so now trying to figure out, the ranger house makes perfect sense. It was something we were going to have to address anyway. Yep. This second house, I'm really struggling with how that thing ultimately gets used and what its highest and best use is now that is in the public's hands.
So we're still working through that. We haven't done some inspections. We really haven't touched the maintenance items that need to happen there yet.
Yeah.
So we know we've got to replace carpet. We've got to paint. We've got to, you know, do things like that.
That was the cat house.
Yes.
That was the cat house. Okay.
Correct.
Cat house.
Yeah, there was cats.
So there's some odor removal items that need to happen. Cal can attest to that. So as a research park, we're still moving forward. I expect to have that conceptual master plan done anytime now.
Okay.
And so we'll share that when we get it.
Okay.
Moving on, some of our parks and wildlife areas. For years now, we've been working with the Ames Town and Country Kiwanis Club to do the Touch a Life Trail around McFarland Park Lake.
Uh-huh.
And so what that is an accessible trail. It's a hard surface, concrete trail. And every year, for many years now, the club comes out and helps staff with pouring concrete to extend the concrete trail, convert the old gravel trail into a concrete all the way around the lake. Well, it's done.
All right.
It's finally done. So the club came out and helped the last pour, which was across the dam. And so now that's all complete. The staff's out there working on today, doing some finishing touches, cutting the seams in the concrete, et cetera.
Well, and from an accessibility point of view, that's outstanding, right?
Outstanding.
I mean, there's so much of what we have that's not going to be real accessible to those who don't move around as well. This one's going
to
be.
Well, really, you don't have to look very far beyond Ada Hayden to see how much folks enjoy coming out and walking Ada Hayden. And part of it's because there's a concrete trail. And so you get all kinds of use out there. And this is now another option for folks that come out that have mobility impairments, as well as just folks that want to come out at night, not to have to worry about wet conditions or stepping on gravel or whatever it may be. It's just a nice, pleasant walk. Last year, the Kiwanis Club built a... A gazebo. What's the word I'm looking for? built a swing, covered swing there on the trail, and so now that's part way along the back side of the trail, and so it's a nice resting spot for folks that want to sit on the swing and overlook the lake, and it's just
that
wonderful.
One with just a picture last fall.
Yeah.
Very nice place.
Exactly.
Very nice.
So. We did receive quotes. We're budgeted this year to put a vault restroom at Dakin's Lake on the original campsite area, and so we received quotes to do that. That will be a precast building. It's going to match to the best we can make it match the other buildings that we constructed there. So we're ready to move forward with that soon.
Hey, while we're there, can we talk about the potential of cabins at Dakin's Lake?
Yeah, you bet.
So is it possible for us? So the thought is, for what Hamilton County just did something, right?
This was discussed by Bill Hathaway.
Yeah.
He'll update you.
Okay. Then I'll leave it alone if you're going to update me in a minute.
Well, that's I hadn't planned to talk about that, but.
And we don't need to talk about it today. I would like to know when the board can expect to see some kind of proposal, with the thought being that cabins could be paid for out of revenues from the cabins.
Right. You bet. You'll see it in our budget request.
Okay. Perfect. Right.
And so we've placed it in there. The board discussed it last night, and the idea is to build two. Built two nice cabins there at Dakin's Lake. We designed it with the idea of building three. Not sure we can build. I think just start with two. Not sure we can build three the level that we want to right now. So let's just focus on two. I'm going to be touring some other cabins here later this week and get some ideas on how they built theirs. You know, the fact of the matter is that wherever there are, wherever either the state or the counties have these cabins at parks, revenue goes up, usage goes up, weekends are booked, and they pay for themselves. And it's a nice.
Well, and it's more than a one for one. So you build a cabin. It's more than just renting that cabin. Every study I've seen shows that you also increase your usage in other parts of the park where people are bringing their fifth wheel or bringing their motorhome or bringing, you know, camping out with tents or whatever. But you have, you know, the cabin for people like me that don't own a fifth wheel or a motorhome or not sleeping on the ground.
Right. So there are tremendous options, and not just for, say, camping, but let's say a little retreat. Let's say a few people that want to get together for a business retreat, then they'll go there.
But you guys will have that put together for the board to review as part of our budget talks.
Yes.
Perfect. Good.
Yep.
Thank you.
And part of every fall is seed harvest that we do, and some of it's with combines you're familiar with, and some of it's with, and when I say combines, I want to be careful on how your visual image of the combine. We're talking about old Alice Chalmers pole vines that are hung, put together with a string and a prayer. And so we've got some of those, and we keep those running and do as much prairie seed harvest as we can, as well as we have many public events, formal times when we get volunteers to come out and hand harvest seed. So all said and done, we've got in the neighborhood of 350 pounds of seed harvested this year, which is probably going to do, give or take, 40 acres of seeding. So it's a significant amount, and I'm very pleased with our results this year. Every year we try to do it a little bit better, and I think next year we've got some ideas on how maybe we can make that process a little better. But trying to make that old machinery work is difficult, and so we've got some other ideas that we tried this year. We failed on a new idea, and so we're going to tweak that and try again next year on trying to make that better.
Yeah, that's not failure. That's just finding out one more way not to do something.
Correct. Let's see. moving forward, I guess some of our staff changes. As you know, when we hired park superintendent earlier this summer, we hired Ryan Wiemold, who has been a park ranger for us for years. So he is now in the role of park superintendent, and so he oversees all of our parks operations. So on both shops, the McFarland shop and the Hickory Grove or Indian Creek shop, all the operations throughout the county. So he's been a tremendous addition in that capacity. Very happy to have him on board. And so he left a vacancy. He left a park ranger vacancy. We advertised that, and we filled that with the conservation technician 2 position that we had, the person in that position, Danny Simcox. So he's been with the county for, I'm going to say, 3 years, and so we hired him as a new park ranger to fill Ryan's spot over at McFarland. And I'm going to note, of all of these hires, we don't just do in-house recruitment or in-house advertising. We throw a broad net. And been very pleased that we've had some internal candidates really rise to the occasion and show they've got what it takes to take that next step. And so Danny moved into the park ranger position. We'll be sending him to the academy starting in January, and then he'll finish the academy in April. And then we had the Tech 2 position to fill. We went out, did a similar recruitment, and filled that with one of our conservation technicians from Hickory Grove. So Russ DeWall, who's been with us for many years, is now our conservation technician 2. It's the one person that we have in that position countywide, and they're located out of McFarland. And so he moved from Hickory Grove over to McFarland for the new position. Very happy to have him on board. So at the moment, we are recruiting for a conservation technician job, and that will not be an in-house candidate because that's our entry-level job. That recruitment ends, I think, next Friday, and so we'll be hiring that one soon. So hopefully at that point we'll have a full house with staff again. That would be nice. As far as our environmental education program, I think you're familiar. We received some grants to do pollinator gardens at the schools, and so we're moving forward with that. We had the students out helping to plant in those, and their parents out helping to plant. We had a booth at the Night Out function, and very well received. We had our third annual what we call Wild Women of the Woods, and we just can't.
There's a lot of Wild Women.
The demand for that is incredible. We could easily offer 2 of those and fill them both, but we had to give or take 70 folks that came out and partook in that. We added another day, so I think it was a two and a half day event, and had speakers come in and teach kind of outdoor skills, and just really well received, really well received. So that's a highlight for us. We had 70 folks there, and there for 2 nights. So, and we do that at Hickory Grove Park. So, we also, as you know, we're working on fundraising for a new wildlife area along the Skunk River, south of Ames, called the Jordan Wildlife Area. We had an open house there. That open house was very well attended. Probably 200 people that were there. And everyone that was there is just exceptionally excited about that new wildlife area.
As they should be.
We're moving forward on fundraising there. We had an $880,000 goal. And last I checked, we were probably in the neighborhood of in the last $20,000 of that goal. We received some large grants for that, as you know. We received a state habitat stamp grant, $300,000+ for that. We received another $100,000 grant, and then the Pheasants Forever chapter has been helping significantly raise funds. Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation has been helping to raise funds. The Outdoor Alliance of Story County has been helping to raise funds. So, again, it's one of those projects that these just don't come forward. Obviously, you know, we haven't come with a request at all to the Board of Supervisors for this funding. Again, that kind of dollar amount, and it's come from the community because the community wants it.
And the impact that it's having, and this is what really fires me up as much as anything, the impact that it's having is much bigger and broader than just the ground that we're taking as part of this wildlife area, because you have how many now new parcels that are in private hands that are coming into more of a conservation mentality.
Right, right. So just, I'm going to say, just in the, let's say you drew a circle around this property at a 3/4 of a mile radius, you got another 500 acres that have now been enrolled in conservation programs in private hands. And I won't say it's all directly it was a result of this, but this parcel was the nucleus, and
right.
That's that seed parcel.
Well, it's the domino that gets a lot of the rest of this going.
Yeah. So it's really a tremendous project. The vet school, the wildlife care clinic, which is the wildlife rehabilitation portion of the vet school, came out that day, and they released some owls that had been rehabilitated, and that was nice to see.
So they've been rehabilitated. We shouldn't expect them to be hanging out on corners of bad neighborhoods.
I hope not. You
got to watch those owls.
I know. They're kind of squirrely. I guess the last thing I just want to say is we've got a number of events coming up. The one that I want you to put on your calendars, you should have received an email invite for this, is our legislators reception, and that is December 16th. That's a Friday, and it will be in the morning. We'll probably start at 8:30 and be done out of there by noon.
Yep.
This year, this is the third year we've done it. We're taking a little bit different focus on it this year, in that we're focusing on water quality, which is not unique. However, we're really reaching out to the cities in the county and having them kind of shine some light on some of the water quality work that they've been doing. I'm still in the process of developing the program for the day, but we know that city work will be highlighted. Ames, as an example, will be there to talk about some of the work that they've done. Story City is going to talk about some of the work that they've done. And so, it's really exciting to get some more city involvement and really showcasing what we're doing. And then we'll talk about the county level as well. And then the NGO level, non-government organization level as well. So
outstanding. Mike, thanks. Question for Mike?
No. Thank you.
Lucky to have you. Thank your board for us.
Well,
and I'm glad we were able to put that together.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Next item is discussion of building improvements at the Story County Animal Shelter. Sue McCaskey and Cal Pearson, you guys take your time walking up.
I'll be right back.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
Hi, Sue.
How are you doing?
Good.
Good.
After 11:30, right?
Sanders.
After 11:30.
Oh, very good for it.
Put that in the policy.
Anyway, just start ordering it now and just give him a call.
I'm sure he appreciates you answering.
Well, if he's not here to defend himself, he's not.
Thank you.
Thanks for walking slow. So we own this beautiful new animal shelter, or not new, new to us owning it. And now we've got to make sure that we're utilizing it to its utmost. You guys have been meeting and talking about things that have to be done, things we'd like to get done, and then maybe some things even beyond that. Tell us what you know at this point.
Okay. Well, Cal provided a list to us of things that, for safety reasons, and also things that we'd like to add to the shelter ourselves. Bathroom upgrades so that they're handicap accessible. Door upgrades so that we have more like the panic doors instead of the doors that we have. And they will swing out and not swing in. Noise baffles, which I've been checking into that. I've got several good possibilities. Furnace room enclosures, and I'm going to let Cal maybe take that one on what they even do. Do they wall it or?
Yeah, we had some suggestions and some requests from the local fire chief and also from our ICAP insurance carrier. And September 1st, we had a meeting with myself, Sue, Alyssa, Chairman Sanders, and my assistant, John Eicholt. At that meeting, Chairman Sanders directed me to get some pricing on these different items. So we did that. And after we started totaling these prices up, we come to the conclusion that we needed to talk to Ethan, our county attorney, assistant county attorney, and we've met the threshold of $100,000 and over on these different improvements, which according to section or Iowa code, we need to hire an architect to look into this. Also, we meet the threshold of $75,000 for the capital improvement plan, whether we want that committee to look at that. Uh-huh. And then we would have to go out for bid for these items. We've tried to juggle things around with the suggested items and basically required items to bring this building up to what I call a commercial Story County public building, such as the rest of our buildings we have.
Yes, I mean, let's just be clear. So it's different when we're a tenant than when we're an owner as far as what's required or what's reasonable to have done. Mm-hmm. And the reality is when we were a tenant out there, there were items that are not acceptable under public ownership for the way we handle the public and what's available to the public and the public safety. Now that we own it, we don't have any choice in the matter. We've got to take care of it. That's one part of this. The second part of this is making sure that now that we own that building, we're utilizing it in the most appropriate, most highest and best use of that building. And that's going to require some configuration changes and possibly some additions. But I think it makes perfect sense, Cal, that we're getting to the level that we need to have some outside expertise, whether it was required of us or not, to come in and look at this and put together some priorities. Marty, for you, since you weren't, actually, it was Paul Tude who was running with this thing, and I was the voice of let's go a different direction. Let's build something new. We're going to have a lot of money that we're going to have to spend by acquiring a building that's 20 years old. And when we got to analyzing all of it, looking at possible locations that we could build a new animal shelter, it became evident really, really quickly that the best course of action was to purchase that building knowing that we were going to have substantial dollars that we were going to have to put into. Now, the good news is we got the building substantially cheaper than we thought we were going to have to pay for it. And Sue's done such a great job raising money through the years, or not even raising money, making yourself a place that people want to donate money. How about if we say it like that? That there was substantial dollars, half, in fact, of the dollars necessary to buy the place. That said, we knew with our eyes wide open when we purchased that place that there was going to be some substantial dollars that need to be spent. I think probably we're getting our eyes opened a little further even than we expected, but we knew there was going to be substantial dollars that needed to be spent. So that's how we ended up here. It sounds to me like it's going to be a little more involved process maybe even than we were expecting. My question would be, are there any minimalistic things we can do? Like, I don't know if you have yet cut a doorway between the area we weren't utilizing and the area we were utilizing. Are there any rudimentary things that we can just slip in and do while we go through this full process of figuring out what's going to get done?
Well, according to Ethan's suggestion, it's considered a whole project.
Okay.
So you look at it that way, no, nothing has been done because it's all one project.
Okay.
So piecemealing it, you may say, is not the way to go.
Okay.
So, and I don't have the staff or the time right now to spend on that. So.
And so what type of realistic timetable, assuming all this was done, did the fire marshal or any of those ICAP put a timetable as to when it all needed?
Well, they'd have liked them done a long time ago, but the building wasn't ours at that time, so there wasn't much we could do. So, no, they haven't put any deadlines on us at this point. I haven't had another inspection yet from either of those entities. So they know we have good intentions of doing it, and I think that helps out a lot, that they know that we want it like the rest of our buildings. They're familiar with our buildings, so they know that we're not going to just sweep this under the rug and not take care of it.
I've been watching some of these animal TV shows. Sue, are you going to come back at some point and kind of have a little TV monitors and little things so you can kind of watch the animals and kind of do all that, and then we can use this as a fundraising activity and so forth?
Well, actually, it's funny you say that. We are going to put a little blurb together about you don't appreciate this until you probably work there, but we have the dogs trained after about 2 days when they're there. We take them out in the morning, let them go potty, put them in their kennels. There's like usually 10, 12, 14 of them. And we can open the kennel doors, and we all stand there and go like this, and they all run right into their own cages because they know there's food in there. It's hilarious to watch because they go around the corner so fast their legs are going like this. But they all know where they belong, and they all go there for their breakfast. And we're gonna work something out with that. And we're also going to do a thing that when people adopt an animal, we're going to start a program where when they adopt something, we're going to do a little something with it and then put it all together. So
good. Thank you. So, Kat, you're telling me it's one project. Anything we do to the building is one project. What about fencing? External.
Well, that's in our list too. I really don't have an answer for you, Rick, on that. I don't know why we couldn't put that up right away.
I was wondering about that
if
too.
If that's something we wanted to get done.
Because that's really
right
something we wanted to do anyway.
So there's two levels of fencing that we need.
Right.
We need fencing to separate our property from the pond. But it also would be nice if we had some fencing that was almost a little area that an animal could run in.
Right.
Yeah. And that would be on the north side, and it would be an enclosure, and it would have gates.
But what I don't want to do is I don't want to get into doing something like that, and then we've got to dismantle it in order to be able to do some of the construction we've got to do.
Right.
And so just a question for you.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I don't want to do anything like that we're going to tear it down and redo it again. So.
Okay. So are you guys here to tell the board today that we need to interview and hire an architect in order to figure out what we're doing, what kind of sequence we're doing it in, and going from there? I mean, is that what we're hearing today?
That would be the consensus.
That would be my first step, is with the numbers we've gathered, we need to start with that step to get an architect on board and start the meeting with Sue and discussing how that's going to lay out and to look the building over and see what he has to say.
Questions or thoughts, board?
How good is the phone system out there?
Beg your pardon?
How good is the phone system out there?
Well, we just had IT out there last week.
And
so we're not actually tied in with the county's internet system. They're going to do that, but we're also there's also a possibility that we're going to be switching servers and users. So they're thinking about that right now. I've not heard back from them, but you know, at this point, we have very we think it's okay. Let me put it this way: I'm old. I think the internet coming up is an adequate time. My younger people think, boom, you should turn on the computer and it's there. So we have a little difference of opinion. But, you know, I think that they're looking to probably do to improve our internet quality and, you know, our phone system. We will be able to then have, we have another number other than the one we use, but we don't have the phone system set up for it. So they're going to incorporate us into the county phones that you're using, and that'll all be done. Like I said, that'll all be done when they figure out how they want to go about it.
Okay. Yeah, your thoughts on selecting an architect, and let me preempt whatever you're about to say. I feel pretty strongly that this is one of those. This is an outside the box kind of creative project that we're talking about. It's not real straightforward as I see it. There's multiple possibilities. I'd like to have the opportunity for a group to interview multiple architects about the process, and then ultimately there to be a decision, some kind of have some kind of competition to choose the right architect, rather than just, I know in the past we've just selected an architect and we've dealt with that architect. I'd like us to think about using a little different process this time. Thoughts?
Whatever the board directs. The last time, you know, I met with a couple different local architects when we were talking about the infill at the Justice Center. It was very
important. Conservation to me has utilized a really nice process, a little different than architecture, but in selecting who we were going to utilize to put together plans for us. I would like to see us utilize a similar kind of model to that in putting this together. And so maybe you guys can work with Mike on what they've put together, who's been involved in that. I mean, ultimately, the decision is going to rest with the Board of Supervisors, but we should have a group of people that maybe even includes one supervisor to go through the process and then come back and make a recommendation to the board where we go. Board thoughts on that?
Yep. That's how we build stuff in the schools.
Yep. So can you guys put together what that plan would look like, what kind of timeline we're looking at? Clearly this is going to have budgetary implications, so we need to get it done in a fairly timely manner, and at least have some kind of placeholders that we can put in budgetarily. It is not entirely done by the time we approve a budget in early March.
We'll do our best.
Do that. Yes.
Okay. So then board, if it's okay with you, I'd ask two of you work with Deb Shildroff just to put together a plan of how we'll go about selecting an architect to work with, and then plans will build itself from there.
Okay.
Good?
Mm-hmm.
Board, you good with that?
Yeah.
That doesn't require motion. That's just direction.
Right. Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much. Next item is discussion of a generator at the Human Services Center. This is something that's been in it's been in a couple places, but Coon Cog is where it surfaced most recently. And Leanne, first sighting of Leanne today. Hi, Leanne.
Good morning, Mrs. Archer.
Can I kick off?
Sure.
As was just stated, it is an element of one of several plan action steps of the county's COOPCOG that was approved in September. That plan action step just simply states, within 3 months of adoption of the plan, Story County will identify funding to complete a generator study at the HSC and provide such direction to the facilities management director. And at the time fiscal year 18 budgeting is being developed, the Board of Supervisors will consider budgeting for such improvements.
Boy, we've already missed our 3 months.
Yeah.
We said 3 months, and it's clearly been, what, four since we adopted the COOP?
No, we're right at the 3 months.
Right. Oh, okay.
Right there. Yeah. You scared me for a second.
And I guess I'm the one to blame for bringing this to your attention. We started talking about the COOPCOG, and I had some comments from our IT department that we can't have a backup building if we don't have a
backup generator. I've also heard the discussion from emergency management. So that's why I brought this about. And we're right in the middle of Ames there. I'm asking for you to approve this, consider this study, just so that in the past when the Justice Center came online, there were some issues out there, whether they could have generators out there and the right specifications. So I wanted all the T's crossed and all the I's dotted that, yes, we can do this, and what we would be putting at that location. And because there's a lot of things to determine, you know, the parking in, for that building is determined on the use of that building. Well, that use has changed since it was built. And if we put a generator there, we may need some of the parking spaces. And I just don't want to get into this and have a hiccup that everything stops. And
you speak of a generator, you know, philosophically, what kind of size are you envisioning? When you mentioned about the parking, because I'm familiar with the south, with the east side, and where your garage is and so forth. This would have to be something very close to where, like, either your dumpster or you know.
You're correct, Wayne. Just to the east of where the dumpsters are.
Okay.
Where we park some of our trucks would probably be the most logical spot to get up to the electrical room with the transfer switches. But, you know, size is something that needs to be discussed, too. If we were to run the whole building, we would probably be looking at one the size of one of those units that sits out at the Justice Center, rather large unit. If we're just looking at shedding some of the loads in that building, and just worried about, you know, primary functions in there to keep the building running for emergency situations, we may be looking at one about the size of the one that sits out here. You know, and then, like I say, fuel storage is an issue, too. So there's a lot of things that I would like the professionals to gather that information and make sure that it would be a go. Otherwise, you know, we probably need to be looking at another facility for this Coop Cog location other than human.
Yeah, so yeah, we've identified that as a backup emergency operation center.
Right.
And for multiple reasons, I think it's important that we fully analyze the ability to put a generator over here. What's it going to cost us roughly to have the study done?
$6,500.
Good. Thoughts?
You need to know what you need. You don't know it, you say million. $6,500 is a small price to pay if they were right.
At this point, you can absorb this in your budget, but we're going to have a conversation in the spring about making you whole with a couple of projects we put in.
Yeah, at this time,
yeah.
We'll have to have it.
Okay.
Have a visit.
Thoughts?
No,
thanks. Well spent, and I look forward to, I guess, the number. I don't know what, do you have an idea? I mean, what it cost to put the generator outside here? I know it's been some time ago, but. What was the dollars the county spent at that point?
You know, a generator, transfer switches, I guess I didn't bring that, but I'm pretty sure we're going to be over the 100,000 mark.
Okay. Right.
And like I say, depending on the load that we want to carry of that building, will be a big determination on that.
Right.
Okay. So since this is an item directing our facility manager to go spend dollars that are not in his budget at this point, let's go ahead and do this as an action item. I guess we can't do it as an action item. It's just a discussion.
Yeah. We bring it back, though.
Bring it back.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can go ahead and...
So you go ahead and get an agreement put together and bring that back as a consideration for the Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. Yeah, if you can get it done by then. December 6th.
If you get it done by then.
Oh, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate you guys looking into this. All right, public forum number two, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that are not on this agenda. Board may not take any action, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address us? Seeing no one moving mic from liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, Wayne.
Pastor on the liaison assignments and the committee meeting, Mike just did a great job of summarizing the Conservation Board meeting last night, and
all the items that were on the agenda, and that I'm looking at, that I didn't see anything there. I do know that they are planning a tentative meeting on December 1st, which is in budget preparation, so that we could get the budget submitted. We thought it was, I don't know if it was the 5th or 6th, I believe, that had to be, but that was the only thing I think he really didn't bring. Yeah.
Okay, good, thank you. Marty,
liaison assignments for committee meeting updates.
Liaison basis, review with the Belford Township trustees and their clerk, Dave Stenson. And through a lot of convoluted heavy lifting by Ethan Anderson out of the county attorney's office, we have a cemetery that is waiting for a check to be written by the trustees for moving it from private ownership to them, and we wish them well, and they have a likelihood of success on a going forward basis. So it was a labor of love, because what Ethan had to do to make this happen was not an easy process. It was quite the backstory, and I'm appreciative for the fact this is in my township, and I know everybody involved, that it came at this time and got to see the resolution that it's going to have.
I want to say how much I appreciate on behalf of the board you picking this up and running with it. I remember when, I mean, you were just really a new supervisor when this came across my desk, and I said, hey, you drive by here every single day. How about if you dig in and figure this out? It was a situation where this cemetery had stopped being cared for. It was atrocious to look at. People had started bringing their own lawnmowers and lawn care equipment from home in order to trim around their loved ones' spaces, and it looked like a hayfield everywhere else. I'm really, really happy that we could get resolution. I appreciate you giving Ethan credit. I think you deserve a lot of the credit as well for pushing this through.
Thank you, Chairman Sanders.
Absolutely. Announcements, Wayne.
I've got a couple board obligations on Thursday. Unfortunately, I'm only going to be at one. IMWCA trustees will be meeting. I'm going to attend that. That'll be my final meeting of the year. And I've already notified them as a result of the outcome of the election that they will need to start looking for a replacement. That is a replacement that is not mandated or obligated by the county. It's a voted position. They look at the membership of the various counties and will determine what elected official that could be there. Sometimes it would be a city manager or a supervisor and so forth. So I'll know more after the meeting on Thursday what their plans are. More than likely they will be trying to just fill someone for the remainder of my term, and then they will be on the ballot later next year for the executive. So I'll update you on that, and I think that's about I thought there was
and then you'll miss anything resources for conflicts, and
right.
And Marty or I can't cover that, so we just need to reach out to Joel and let him know that we won't.
And I think juvenile detention, I believe, is scheduled for the 18th. I haven't seen anything yet. Usually I get something in the mail or at least a notification that there is a meeting, but that would normally be on Friday.
Good.
So we'll
thank you. Announcements.
Iowa Emergency Medical Service Association met recently, and they offered an honor to both our Sheriff's Dispatcher, Colin Chinnery, in his capacity to service our county, and that is no small thing. It goes to show you that when you call 911, you have one of the state's best.
And tell me that award again.
Colin Chinnery, as you can see, I think we might want to bring this back to us. And in addition to that, we have the Story County Medical or Ambulance Service also picked up award at this, to which we should be proud for the fact that we don't give any thought to these people until we absolutely positively need them for ourselves or our loved ones and friends.
And when we need them, we need them.
We need them. We need them now. And the fact
I believe it would be appropriate for us to recognize at least Colin and possibly
we have an ambulance crew there.
Right. Yeah,
the artisan director. I'm not sure the people particularly involved that did not have names, but I think that we can look into that and possibly bring that back to us here.
Yeah, so I think, Deb, I would ask if you would look into the board just taking a chance just to recognize these two awards at a future board meeting. Okay.
I just noticed one quick pop-up just came, and Marty, you probably are familiar with this. December 2nd, the Ripple Effect grant presentation at Colo City Hall just popped up. That's a Friday. I think it's from 2 to 2.30 p.m. or something like that. So
that's no small thing, and that's it.
That's okay.
And I appreciate what was done by Drew Camp with the ADC and Leanne to make that happen, because that was, I think this is a path forward for not only the community of Colo, but possibly for other small communities in our county.
Yep. Outstanding. Announcements for me. No Board of Supervisors meeting next week. And then the 29th, so that's the 22nd, and then the 29th will be a claims-only conference. One of us will call, at least one of us will call in, and we will only be approving claims. There will be nothing else on the agenda. And then the next full Board of Supervisors meeting will be December 12th.
Yeah.
December 6th. Why do I keep going there? one more week. Okay, so December 6th.
All right.
If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So move. Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Sure.